Welcome to the Colorado Fire College Podcast, your source for knowledge to keep you in the fight. Stay tuned for the latest educational lectures, new product reviews, and interviews with the top firefighting professionals. Let's get started. Here are your hosts, Lieutenant Chris Gay and Lieutenant Jordan Sherrill.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Colorado Fire College, Knowledge Staying in the Fight. Today, I want to start by thanking everyone. We have broken 300 downloads because of all the subscribers, you guys telling all your coworkers about what's going on here. We really appreciate the support. Top it off, we've become an international podcast. We've had people from Ireland and the United Kingdom begin downloading and following our podcast. We appreciate your support as well. Anyone emails me an address of your fire station, we'll make sure to send you guys some swag as soon as possible. So, moving on. Michelle Swisher from Golden, Colorado had recently written into us asking the question if our response plans change if we know there's a known occupant or animals in a structure fire. First and foremost, obviously we're going to risk a lot to save a lot. We're going to risk nothing to save what's already lost. Knowing that, fire professionals have to do a couple different things. We've got the priority of life safety, next up instant savability, with last property conservation. Those three elements are going to dictate what we decide to do as a plan. Oftentimes, we'll either have to go offensive or defensive fighting a fire, depending on what the risk will be. And from there, we'll try and use the other priorities to make sure we do the least amount of damage as possible. With that being said, there's obviously a lot of decisions we made in command roles. You never want to second guess command. And obviously, we're never going to look at everything the same way 2020 after the fact. But it's a tough position. They have to do what they can with the information they've got. And they've got a lot of tough decisions to make. So I hope that answers your question. If it doesn't, let me know. We'll revisit it. Moving forward, we're going to review what we talked about last segment and go forward into the last of that chapter, and that'll cover the first chapter of the IFSTA book for awareness. If you guys have any questions or you think we've missed anything, please let me know, and we'll go from there. All right. Talk to you soon. So last time we were reviewing hazardous material lecture, we talked about a couple different things. Talked about the different levels of certification, from awareness to operations, to mission-specific technician. We talked about different routes of entry that you could get harmed with, such as inhalation, absorption, ingestion, and injection. We also talked about different effects it could have on the body, such as an acute response, a delayed response, or a chronic response, depending on the type of exposure or the chemical you were exposed to. But now we're going to talk about three different ways they can harm you. Now, these mechanisms of harm would include energy release, corrosivity, and toxicity. Energy release itself has six different subcomponents, one of them being temperature, whether it be hot or cold, an exothermic or endothermic reaction could harm you. Many people know I've got a flash freeze burn injury on my hand a couple years ago, and yeah, learned how quickly a cold injury can happen. They're just as dangerous as heat injuries. A lot of people don't think about that. So these thermal hazards are very common. Obviously, it could be a chemical reaction, a sudden temperature change. It could be a reaction to fire, explosion, or it could be environmental factors, such as, you know, 140-degree day out in Arizona. But all these can play a big factor in the energy release. Next is the mechanism. Now, the mechanism is basically the after product of an explosion, shock waves, different elements of shrapnel moving through the air. The next element within the energy release is actually pressure. And pressure kind of gets into a big one because you have several different elements of it where you could have a situation of a blevy, which we'll get in that later on. But a cylinder is designed to do special things, designed in special ways. The shape, the texture, the material used, all will determine what product can be held within that. Next up is electricity. Obviously, this plays a big role in everything we do. Stored energy, kinetic energy, whether it's a stray current or direct current, alternating current, all of those are different ways you can be harmed. Chemicals can also harm us. We're producing new chemicals every day with different levels of corrosivity and toxicity. Fortunately, some of these things can be detected by humans and some can't. Some of these are so minute that can be extremely toxic in just a very small amount. And the last one is radioactivity. Radioactivity is a special beast on its own. You can't see it, but it's definitely there and can definitely do a lot of damage. Those six different components of energy release tie into different ways you can be harmed. But the next big discussion point will be corrosivity. Now, corrosivity has its own ability to hurt you when contacting with skin or being inhalated as vapors. It takes special tools to detect it. It can literally cause your skin to boil and burn off. When it comes to toxicity basically has the ability to incapacitate you in any means, whether it be inhalation or absorption into the skin. Those three major components are the three biggest ways you can be harmed in a hazardous materials incident. But it's not exclusive. We also have clandestine labs and weapons of mass destruction. With clandestine labs, oftentimes they're booby-trapped. The perpetrators want to remain anonymous, want to remain not caught, and want to make sure that whatever they're doing is destroyed so it can't be used against them. Oftentimes, the labs they set up have volatile chemicals being used to extract the methamphetamine. These situations are always a hazmat, so anytime they're sending in a raid team, they also have a hazmat specialist going in with them. When it comes to weapons of mass destruction, that can be a lot of different things, whether it's biological weapons, chemical weapons, dirty bombs, anything of that nature. Those obviously are going to require specialized hazmat technicians who know how to deal and work with these things, usually military-based. So those are basic ways that you can get harmed in a hazmat situation, but it's not all exclusive. The biggest thing we need to remember about hazmat materials is that you can be harmed in many different ways. Small amounts can be lethal. You don't always know when you're in a toxic environment. And oftentimes, the best plan can obviously be flawed. Remember to use specialized PPE and your detection equipment so that you do the best you can to protect yourself and your team when you go downrange. That covers almost all of the first chapter of the IFSTA book. If you guys have any other questions, please email me and we'll go over them. All right, you guys have a great day. Talk to you soon.
Thanks for listening to the Colorado Fire College Podcast. We release a new podcast every Wednesday. Be sure to subscribe so you don't miss the next one. While you're at it, leave us a rating and review to make it easier for others to find the show. You can follow us on Facebook and Instagram at Colorado Fire College. Visit our website at coloradofirecollege.com. Sign up for our newsletter and get access to even more content. You can even ask questions or recommend topics to be featured on upcoming episodes. That's coloradofirecollege.com.